Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hi, I'm John McEnroe.
I'm Bjorn Borg.
This is Martina Navratilova.
I'm Mats Wilander.
I'm Stan Wawrinka.
I'm Leighton Hewitt.
I'm Andy Murray.
And you're listening to The Tennis Podcast.
The Tennis Podcast.
The Tennis Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Tennis Podcast, brought to you in association with The Telegraph, brought to you by myself, Catherine Whittaker of Eurosport, and David Law of BBC Radio 5 Live and BT Sport and many other places. And we are in the particular place of Marylebone Station, aren't we, David? We are both back in the UK, some of us more recently than others. This podcast is brought to you in association with The Telegraph and with jet lag everywhere, because we are struggling a little, aren't we?
Well, yeah, you particularly, because I've been here for a week and I'm just getting over it. If only there was something that could take a picture of you now. Oh, there is. And I'm going to post it on Twitter and Facebook and Instagram and anything else I can show it on, because Catherine at the moment is wearing a coat that makes her look like a lion stroke a husky wolf, with the fluffiest, furriest mane you've ever seen in your life. And it's because we're sitting outside the coffee shop, which I will not name because they're not sponsoring us.
This coat is the best investment I ever made. If it weren't for this coat, I'd be in a well of misery right now upon my return to the UK after 4 weeks of glorious Melbourne. This coat is the only thing keeping me from a deep, deep well of despair.
Yeah, well, you will probably have already seen a picture of it by now. And if you haven't, go to our Tennis Podcast, because I'm going to post it. Because we've had to wait 15 minutes to record the podcast until I stopped laughing.
He's not actually joking. He's just been breaking into spontaneous laughter. But anyway, I'm not sure I'd be able to talk if it weren't for this coat. So laugh all you like, David. The podcast is happening. Yes, I'm only 2 days into jet lag, and it's going worse rather than better. I was up at 4:30 this morning. David is looking fresh as a daisy. He's been back in the UK since... When did he fly back, David?
Tuesday I've been back since. So, yeah, I've had my horrendous nights of waking. I mean, it doesn't matter who I talk to in tennis. I got a note from Jamie Delgado the other day saying...
It say hashtag let's do this on the end? Because he can't tweet without that hashtag anymore.
Well, he needs the let's do this about jet lag solutions, because he appears, after 25 years of being travelling... Now, I don't know anybody who's cracked it. Nobody. Everybody is miserable when they come back from these tournaments. Actually, probably the only person who seems to be immune. There's one or two journalists. Mike Dixon from the Daily Mail seems to be hardened to it to a point where he doesn't seem to experience jet lag. But virtually every past player, champion, people that have been at the top of the game for 40 years, 40 years ago, still complain about jet lag, waking up in the middle of the night, feeling rough all day. It's definitely tennis player problem, isn't it?
And first world problems.
Well, and not even that, because it's so specific. It's just us lot who travel to tennis calendar whinging.
And you shared your plane home, David, with a tennis player, didn't you?
I did. I've already name dropped Jamie Delgado, which was it's
I believe he counts as a name drop these days. Oh, how far he's come.
I definitely think, Jamie, that you are a name drop. There you go. There's a compliment. Rafael Nadal was on my plane home, in my attempts to get over jet lag, I decided to leave Australia just a few hours after the final, with the idea of getting back in the evening, and hopefully going straight to bed. That didn't work. But anyway, what it did mean is that when I arrived at the the airport, one of the very nice people who works in tennis, Giorgio Di Palermo, invited me into one of the lounges, which frankly I had no business being in, given the criteria of my ticket. But he got me in, and I'm sitting there having a chat with him, and in walks Team Nadal, just about 3 hours after the final in which Nadal had lost. So there was Carlos Costa, there was Uncle Tony, there was Carlos Moya, and in walks Rafa with his baseball cap on. Quite interesting that nobody bothered him. You know, the whole time that we were there, we took the flight as well. We ended up in Dubai, which sort of 12, 14 hours later, went also to the lounge there. There's nobody sort of harassing him, which I found quite interesting, and he seems in pretty good spirits. It did remind me of about 10 maybe eight or 9 years ago. I took the same journey with him, and he was up in we weren't together, we just ended up on the same plane together. And this must have been 2009. It was the year he won it, and I remember we're traveling back, and Uncle Tony said to me, could we change seats? Because I was, for some reason, sitting next to Carlos Costa on my seat. And I was using my miles to get an upgrade, for once. And Uncle Tony, I said, yes, Uncle Tony, no problem at all. You can sit here. That's absolutely fine. So I went and sat in the seat behind. And as you do, I looked over his shoulder at what he was watching on TV. He was watching the 2008 Wimbledon final over and over again. Which really amused me.
That is amazing. Yeah.
And then suddenly, out of first class, walks Rafael Nadal, who was clearly sort of, a little bit bored up there on his own. So he came and just sat on the armrest of his uncle for about 3 hours. Very interesting.
Also watching the 2008 Wimbledon final on loop?
He actually seemed utterly uninterested, but Uncle Tony was right into it.
Right, call off the tennis podcast. I've got no anecdote that can compete with that. I've never, to my knowledge, taken any kind of public transport with Rafael Nadal. A public transport-related thought has just occurred to me, though, David. This is the third station that we have recorded in. We're doing the tennis podcast Monopoly. We could complete the Monopoly train set of tennis podcast recordings at some point. I think we might have to go to Fenchurch Street, though. I don't really know where that is, do you?
We're going to go up to the Midlands next, my neck of the woods, because I always have to keep coming down here, And I don't understand the accents, for a start.
You and Dan Evans both. Speaking of which, there's been some Davis Cup happening, a lot of it involving Dan Evans, because Great Britain were taking on Canada in Ottawa. That tie ended yesterday, and it ended in controversial, sensational, unbelievable circumstances. I'm sure every one of you have heard about it by now. It doesn't take us to remind you, but Denis Shapovalov was two sets to love down to Kyle Edmund in the decisive fifth rubber, Dan Evans having just lost the fourth rubber to Vasek Pospisil. And upon losing a break of serve in that third set, hit out a ball into the crowd in frustration, in anger, and it incredibly hit the umpire smack in the eye, pretty nastily, in fact. I believe slow mo show, it did bounce off the microphone first, mercifully, but it was still a pretty hefty blow, and understandably Denis Shapovalov was defaulted instantly, and the match and the tie ended there and then. It was really like nothing I've ever seen before, David. I don't know if you can recall anything similar. The ITF have released a statement saying, amongst other things, it was clear that Mr. Shapovalov did not intend to hit Mr. Gabas, who was the umpire. Arno Gabas, we understand he is doing okay. He was admitted to hospital for checks, and he's got a very, very nasty bruising around his eye, but no lasting damage does seem to be the verdict at the moment. Shapovalov has apologised to him. He was very, very contrite in press immediately. He does seem to understand the gravity of the situation and what he's done. However, David, I know you're very keen on the talking point, certainly debating the issue of whether further sanctions or punishments are required in these such situations, or whether we should just say an accident is an accident. Everyone seems pretty firmly agreed that, while utterly reckless not behaviour to be repeated ever, it was an accident. There's no question as to whether he intended to hit Arnaud Gabas. He did not.
Yeah, he just, in the moment of red mist, having lost his serve, smashed a ball. I imagine he was trying to do one of those sort of undercut sort of swipes that go into the rafters, you know, and he caught it flat, and it just went like an arrow diagonal. I mean, if it hadn't hit the umpire in the eye or in the face, it was going to hit somebody unless something got in the way, and so it was reckless at best. I mean, it was reckless. That's what it was, and you know, it was endangering somebody, the crowd or the umpire, and I mean, it could not have caught the umpire any more flush in the eye, and it was one of those moments where you watched it and everybody had a sharp intake of breath. I was watching it with my wife, and I don't think she really caught what had happened. And I said, he's got to go for that. And it was obvious that this kid was going to have to be defaulted. But then the attention turns.
Sorry, you've just said David Kidd. One of the things I didn't mention there in the intro to the discussion topic is that Denis Shapovalov is 17 years old. It's not an excuse, but it is an important fact.
Yeah, it was clearly one of those where he has not even considered the gravity of what he's doing. He hasn't considered where this ball's going. He's just crashed it into oblivion as far as he sees it, having gone two sets and a breakdown. But he's caught the umpire in a way that made me really, really fear for the guy's safety. I mean, you know, I don't know whether there is precedent on any tennis court of somebody having caught a ball in the eye to that level and ended up getting severe eye damage. But if ever it was going to happen, it was that. Because I've not seen anybody take a ball in the face at that speed before. There are the only precedent I can think of at all of that ilk is Henman in 1995 hitting a ball away, swatting it away into the net, and just as a ball girl ran across and took it flush in the ear, I think, which, you know, again, complete accident, but, you know...
It's one of those peculiar situations where intent doesn't come into it. It's all about the consequence of the action. I mean, balls are swatted away a lot with no consequence, no sanction, no punishment, simply because, happily, by luck, there is no negative consequence. That's one of the peculiar things about these sorts of situations in sport, isn't it?
It is, and this particular one of the reasons I wanted to debate it is because it was so clear ever since. I mean, 12 hours have passed since when it happened, and we're now recording it, and there really isn't a clear verdict from people. It is split opinion right now as to people's views. Those that think this is just an accident, you know, he's been defaulted, he's probably going to get fined, that should be the end of it, accidents happen. Some people have that view. Others, and I was very interested that Richard Ings, the former executive vice president of rules and competition of the ATP, this is a former umpire, was very quickly into the debate to say this is the most serious incident of its type he's ever seen, and a proper suspension is required. I was surprised at the sort of force with which he came out with that view. And there have been many others on social media at Tennis Podcast that we've canvassed that have felt actually something needs to be done about this to send a message to these players that they can't go around recklessly belting balls into oblivion when there are people in the way.
And here are just a few of them. Just firstly, as David mentioned, Richard Ings, he tweeted, a substantial ban is required. The player recklessly rocketed a ball at force, hitting an umpire in the eye. Worst scene. Jamie Baker, a former British player who's doing commentary for the BBC during the match, replied to that. I think that's a fairly harsh view. Accidents can happen anywhere. Much bigger issues in tennis than freak accidents. Yevgeny Kafelnikov then weighed in. You and he are Twitter buddies, aren't you, David? He gets involved in all of your talking points. He says, come on guys, with I think that's 4 exclamation marks. Default is hard enough punishment. If you go beyond, you could end kid career. There are some grammatical errors in that, but I will skim over them due to the language barrier. I think we all know what Yevgeny is getting at. Some people that have interacted with At Tennis Podcast, Richard Woodward: to me, the automatic default is enough of a sanction. Nathan at Nathan7: it's a tough one to judge on because each circumstance is different, but I'd be asking for a few weeks ban to teach a lesson. Susie says you have to have boundaries as in all sports, but stiffer warnings for near misses with rackets and balls are needed. Happens too often. Tony Brown, whose handle is at Tony Brown Knows. I don't know what he knows.
Former West Bromwich Albion player, Bomber Brown. Must be that.
Crikey. It says, wasn't an accident, lashed out on purpose with unfortunate consequences. You make your own luck sometimes, and he made bad luck. And, well, Tony Brown knows. James Farrar: this needs a ban. It was indoors. He was bound to hit someone. Would he have been defaulted if he'd hit a fan, though? Interesting. Ali says, tougher sanctions for anyone hitting ball into crowd towards umpire. Dennis was just copying Novak and Andy. Yeah, that's a very interesting one, isn't it? Because I was going to mention what Dan King, if the Sun's tennis correspondent, tweeted. It's just a sort of a side point, but he was the journalist that took on Novak Djokovic at the O2.
No, it was actually Neil McClemon, the Mirror's journalist, but a good colleague of Dan's, yeah.
Okay, well, yes. It was Neil McClemon, excuse me, Neil and Dan, that took on Novak Djokovic at the O2 last year over Novak's ball abuse with minimal consequences, but that he was tackled on it for exactly this reason, the reason that the consequences of ball racket abuse can sometimes be entirely unintended. And Dan King tweeted yesterday, and that, by the way, is why questions to Djokovic and anyone else about ball smashes and racket tosses are entirely justified. And I'd agree with that. You know, there's no question over whether any of these incidents were intended, but the fact is consequences can be unintended and pretty negative. So I think it entirely justifies the line of questioning to any of the top players, and that is a fair point. You know, the copying Murray and Djokovic, I've never seen Andy Murray do anything of the like yesterday, but the fact is these young players have grown up watching these guys, and we talk about some of their less good behavior on the court, and some of it's more pernicious than others, but the players that are coming through now have grown up watching them rather than perhaps Nadal and Federer, who are the absolute figures of virtuousness on the court, aren't they? And there are consequences to that. It does have an effect on the generations coming through.
I should say, Andy, was it just over a year ago, kicked a ball away in anger that very nearly hit Damien Demassois, the umpire. I mean, obviously, it's not going to have the same degree of force to which Shapovalov hit away his ball. I don't think Djokovic's was in the same ballpark in terms of ferocity, and he also hit it into the ground. But the wider point is, and I think what Neil McClemon was getting at, as much as the danger to the crowd, as much of it was, there is a default for that. If you hit somebody, you are kind of dicing with trouble there in terms of the rules as much as anything. Novak just wasn't having it. I think one of the nice things about Shapovalov, now maybe he had somebody from a public relations perspective in his ear, I felt it was a really heartfelt statement that he came out with instantly, virtually in the press conference, to say, this is on me, I'm embarrassed.
Yeah, it didn't feel staged, did it? It definitely felt heartfelt and spontaneous and genuine, completely genuine.
And I think that the wider point is, should more be done about this kind of thing? Should, although this was unintentional, and although he's accepting blame, should an example be made of this kind of thing so that it sends a message to players that you can't just get away with this? Because what's quite interesting is the journalists kind of tend to back up one another in terms of the issue with questioning Djokovic. The players tend to back up one another, Kafelnikov, Baker, saying we've got accidents can happen, these sort of things. And then but that's why I felt Richard Ng's position was quite interesting, that he was so strong that this should be a serious suspension. Now, do you come up with if you're going to add any additional sanctions to what are already there, do you either clarify and particularly lay out what those are, i.e. if you let go of your racket in smashing it, then or throwing it away, and it has the potential to cause damage. Do you have a grading system for what the punishment is, whether it's loss of points, loss of game, loss of a match, loss of prize money, suspension? Or do you literally say, right, well, we have to take it on its merits and come to a decision, because this guy, in his reckless frustration, could have cost this guy's eye? Do you actually look at that on its own individual characteristics?
Well, once you start looking at could haves, it's very, very difficult, isn't it? Which is why we have a consequence-based system, which is completely inadequate. I do agree, it's completely inadequate, because we currently have a system where if you throw your racket and don't break it, you don't receive a warning for racket abuse. But if you really give it, if you're really good at throwing your racket and you do break it, you get a warning for racket abuse. I mean, that's a completely laughable situation. I understand why it's come to that, and I can't propose a better solution that doesn't end up with people in ludicrous punishments for any niggly little... You know, players have to be able to express themselves on court. You love aggro. You want more aggro. You know, where's the line between a mild racket toss or, you know, what we've seen Marcus Bagdatis and Coco Vandeweghe do at change of ends, you know... Anything freakish could happen. You know, a splinter could come off and land in someone in the crowd. I don't know. You end up with a slight. You could easily end up with a slightly ludicrous situation where you're punishing things for any number of highly unlikely things that could happen as a consequence of quite legitimate expressions of emotion on a tennis court.
Yeah, it's a difficult one, because I tend to go by my gut instincts with a lot of these things, and you know how much I enjoy a racket smash, you know how much I enjoy a row. I enjoyed it when Dan Evans was getting into it with everybody on the bench for Canada. I find it hilarious when Stan Wawrinka bends a racket over his knee. Somebody was saying, actually, that's not a bad idea of a way to do it, to minimise danger. I find it hilarious when Coco Vandeweghe and Marcus Bagdatis break all the rackets in the bag. I did not find that hilarious yesterday. I felt sick watching that. And so, and I don't really know where I fall in terms of a conclusion to all this.
I think you're probably the majority of feeling. There's just a gut feeling that one thing deserves harsher punishment than the other, but gut feeling does not legislation make. And that's the issue that we have here. I'm not sure we're going to reach a... No.
Well, we ran a pole vault on this about an hour and 7 minutes ago, and the 356 people that have voted, Shapovalov was defaulted and is likely to be fined should he receive further sanctions. Yes, ban, because a lesson is needed. 31% say that. 69% say no, it was an accident. That will suffice.
I think it's a really complex one. I think no, nothing further is needed, because an example has been made. I mean, this guy has cost his country, his teammates, a crucial Davis Cup rubber. I mean, as examples and lessons go, I'm not sure it comes much more harsh than that. And his response satisfies me that he understands the gravity of it. But then, yeah, a different player in a different circumstance with a different response, you might feel differently. So I'm really disappointed that, you know, I was gearing up to prepare the agenda with talking about, you know, win or lose, just what a brilliant, exciting talent Denis Shapovalov is. I talked about it in my monologue podcast in Toronto last year when he had that little run, beat Nick Kyrgios along the way. I truly believe that he, if he can put certain very currently obvious elements of his game personality to one side, and I do believe everybody seems to be backing up that he is a very good kid, you know, from good family. He's, you know, he has the ingredients of a great tennis player, and, you know, the prospect of him and Zverev battling it out in 5 years' time as the Murray and Djokovic, I think, is a very real one. And he's a fantastic, fantastic talent. But Kyle Edmund was on top of him, it has to be said, and is kind of seems by the by now to talk about what actually happened tennis-wise.
Important win for him, though. I mean, put aside the ending, he was handily winning that match in a very professional manner, and I feel that Kyle Edmund needed that. big time, because that was, as he acknowledged, a completely substandard performance against Vasek Pospisil. I think the conditions contributed to it. It's perfect for Pospisil, lightning fast. He could play his kind of tennis, and Edmund is going to be a clay court player at heart. That is going to be his very best performances. The ones we're going to talk about in years to come are the ones Carl Edmund puts in on a clay court, in my opinion. But, you know, great professionalism shown from him to come out and front up, frankly, because Evans did what he could. He was beaten by the better player in that reverse rubber. He actually played quite well, I thought, Evans, but Pospisil, superb. And for Edmund to still come out and create a winning scenario for Britain in that fifth rubber, that showed some guts.
Yeah, I agree. It was important tie, potentially, even though they lost it, potentially for Vasek Pospisil as well, who we talked about in one of the Australian Open podcasts. He just disappeared off the face of the planet in terms of top tennis, how top tennis is concerned. So maybe this will be good news for him. So Great Britain progress to the quarterfinals, where they will play away to France, who beat Japan 4-1 without the snubbed Gael Monfils. He was left out of the squad. Apparently he has not shown sufficient commitment to representing his country in the eyes of Yannick Noah. Elsewhere in the Davis Cup, we have hashtag Mr. Davis Cup. He's got his own hashtag, does Steve Darcy of Belgium. He has done it again. He beat Philipp Kohlschreiber and Sascha Zverev en route to Belgium's 4-1 victory over Germany. Germany would have been the heavy favourites going into that one. What a team they've got. And yet Belgium absolutely trounced them there. I mean, yeah, Steve Darcy is just one of those marvels of the Davis Cup, isn't he? Belgium now play, well, actually, at the time that I wrote this agenda, it was the fifth rubber between Argentina and Italy was still in progress. David, do you have an update?
No, I don't, but let's keep talking and I can Google it.
Okay, so Belgium will play either Argentina or Italy. Very interesting, actually. Argentina, with a severely depleted team, the defending champions, obviously, for obvious reasons, Del Potro not playing, but incredibly, Federico Del Bonis opted out of playing that Davis Cup. So, I mean, what bigger fish has Federico Del Bonis got to fry that he's not helping his country to defend the Davis Cup? But anyway, there we go. Argentina, they were 2-2. I'm still talking. They were playing Italy. It was in a fifth rubber. This was at about 5 a.m. this morning. It is still in progress. That is the update we have for you. It is. The score currently is, hang on a second,
It's two rubbers apiece, and it's Guido Paella against Andrea Seppi to decide who wins.
But we can't get a score update. Send in your guesses now for what the score is in that match. We'll try to get to the bottom of that. It'd be a heck of a shock if Argentina do go out in the first round. But anyway, elsewhere in the Davis Cup, Djokovic, he helped Serbia to a pretty easy win over a very young Russian team, Khachanov and Medvedev in that one. Great experience for them. Serbia will now play Spain. They beat Croatia 3-2, despite the heroics of Franco Skugor.
Victor, you mean?
No, now that he's, you know, done something on the world stage, he deserves me to get his name right. Franco Skugor. Remember the name, guys. He's on a charge. He scored an incredible victory over Pablo Carreño Busta, but Croatia lost in spite of that. Nick Kyrgios, he helped Australia to victory over a very depleted Czech team. I was still in Australia while the opening rubbers of that were taking place, and Australia were getting very excited about it all. They think they're going to win the Davis Cup, and who knows, they could. They will now play the USA, and that will be again in Australia because of that funny deal that Australia and America came to about 20 years ago, which still is affecting the Davis Cup to this day.
Yeah, I don't really understand it, but yeah, read Chris Clary's piece in the New York Times. As always, he's the default person to go to understand the politics of all that.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello, Tennis Podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life and, of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right.
Yes, best not tackled again. We tried to tackle it last year, didn't we? And we gave it a good go, but...
We failed.
Chris Clary definitely said it best. So while David is still scrambling around trying to get... No, we've given up on that. I think you might just need to look up what happened in that... What looks to be a thrilling tie between Argentina and Italy. You might just need to look up the results. The Fed Cup, David. The Fed Cup starts this week. It's never-ending on the tennis team treadmill. We have world group matches between the Czech Republic and Spain. Muguruza will play for Spain. Czech Republic have got Pliskova, Strycova and Safarova. The USA with Van der Weij, Risk, Shelby Rogers, Matej Sands take on Germany. A Kerber-free Germany. I think she probably just needs some time away from tennis altogether. Belarus, whose highest ranked player is Sasnovich at 129. They take on the Netherlands, led by Kiki Bertens. Switzerland, they've got a good team, Bashinski, Bencic, Hingis. They take on France, who have only named three players in their team, and none of them is Caroline Garcia, but one of them is Kiki Nadanovic, who won her first tour event this week.
Yeah, and a great story, actually, because, you know, it was St. Petersburg. Incidentally, if you get a chance to have a look at any of the highlights of that, have a look on the WTA website for two things. One is the way they put on the show there. They really do go to town in terms of the intros. They're very imaginative, all sorts of light shows and music, and really, really imaginative. And the other thing is, I mean, any time you watch Yulia Putintseva play, it's pretty emotional and pretty engaging. I mean, she's not everybody's cup of tea, but my goodness, she's fun to watch. And Mladenovic as well. You know, sometimes when we're reading all this stuff after Davis Cup, the Fed Cup this week, and obviously St. Petersburg as well, sometimes think this is just too much tennis in a way. You're straight off the back of Nadal and Federer. Why aren't we using this podcast to just sort of, you know, reflect on that? You kind of feel as though that is needed in a way. Same time, that was a career maker for Kiki Mladenovic. I think she's good enough to do much more in the game than she is. I think she could probably do herself a few favours by playing less doubles in a way. I think she's got a great game, good fun to watch. But, you know, this is somebody who, this may be her career peak right now, winning that title, and it meant the world to her. Have a look at her on-court victory speech. It was really something.
I mean, I really don't think she should be looking at it as potentially her career peak. I don't know why she hasn't had many peaks like that. Okay, maybe she's not a world number one, but I think she has every chance of being a top 10 player, frankly. I mean, she looks, if you were creating a tennis robot, you would create her. I think she's sort of the perfect physique. She's got that very balanced very balanced physique, tall but not too tall. She's got excellent technique. I don't know why she hasn't had more, you know, perhaps not Grand Slam finals and the like, but more wins, the like of which we've seen this week. And I completely agree with you about St. Petersburg, and I almost think they have to try that hard to get the world's attention, don't they? Because you're right, there should be a period of quiet reflection after an Australian Open like the one we just had. And then I heard a lot of people going, oh my goodness, there's tennis happening again, and it's in Russia, and it's cold, and, you know, what's the tennis universe playing at? But actually it was great, and people did sit up and pay attention, and Venus Williams was there. She lost in the second round, but she seemed to have a great time shopping for Fabergé eggs, according to the WTA website. So good for her. Svitolina had a win in Taiwan. She beat Peng Shuai in the final. Just quickly going back to the Fed Cup for GB listeners, they're playing in Europe Africa Group 1. And these Europe Africa and Group pool things that happen in the Fed Cup are quite complicated and convoluted, but actually very exciting if you take the time to pay attention and get into them. They've been drawn in Group C, in Pool C, with Portugal, Latvia and Turkey. So there you go.
Indeed, and we try to stay objective here on the Tennis Podcast, but I'd just like to say a bit of a good luck to Anne Kiothavong, because she's somebody I commentate with on BT Sport. She's her first tie as a Fed Cup captain, and she's put together, I suppose, pretty much the obvious team with Konta leading it, but good luck to her, because she's going to do a great job, I think.
She is. They've got Laura Robson, Heather Watson, Joe Konta and Jocelyn Rae for a bit of a hand in the doubles. So that's what's going on there. I've got one item in any other business, David, and it is Nadal Federer related. So there is going to be some quiet reflection, as I believe is necessary, because I don't think anybody's got over it, really. It's still... I don't know how long it's going to take, but David's looking at me very funnily.
I was just noticing that when you said let's have some quiet reflection for Roger Federer and Rafael Nadal, all the announcements in the in the station just sort of stopped.
It's the power we have, guys. Would that happen in Fenchurch Street Station? I don't know. But the any other business item I have, and it's a talking point I've seen raised a fair bit, and I think it's a completely valid one to raise, whether or not you agree with it, is do these throwback finals, throwback tournaments, the successes of these 35-year-olds, do they reflect badly on the respective tours and the players that are supposedly the next generation or should be the current generation? The likes of, well, on one hand, you've got, I suppose, the Raonic's, Nishikori's, and then behind them, the teams, and then behind them, the Zverevs. And on the women's tour, it's Mladenovic and Garcia. It's, behind that, Naomi Osaka. I think it's hard to point the finger too much at the really young ones because they just need to be given time. But I've heard it argued, Naomi Cavaday, a colleague of mine that I've worked with a lot doing commentary, she certainly thinks it does reflect badly on the two tours. My personal feeling is that I understand the point and I think there is something to it, but I think that's far too simplistic a way of looking at it. I think the reason we cherished it so much is because we know it's a rarity now, because time's running out for these guys. They have to pass the baton, it's savouring something while you've got it. And were we staring down the barrel of, oh my goodness, there are no other decent tennis players, Nadal and Federer are still dominating, we've been waiting for the next lot to come through for ages, but they're still there at the top, or Serena and Venus, that would be different. But that's not the case. This was an unexpected, nostalgic surprise, and that's why it was wonderful.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And I think it reflects badly on certain individuals in a way that I feel that they... And maybe it just reflects that they're not as good as we thought they were. Maybe Thomas Berdych, that was a disappointing performance in a way from him. But what could he do? I mean, that Federer... If for a couple of weeks, Federer played about four or five matches that were like watching him 10 years ago... And he is still the greatest player of all time at his best. His best tennis, that's what I would still say, is the most unplayable of all when he's on and he's on the right surface. The others, I don't buy it. I still think these players were playing at a level of tennis that merited where they were. And, yeah, these guys are not machines. Murray and Djokovic are not always going to be able to play at their very highest level. Yeah, maybe the field were not able to cope and stop Federer, Nadal, Serena and Venus. I accept that. But I don't really think it reflects badly on tennis. I'd much rather celebrate the fact that it reflects incredibly well on four of the best players the game has ever seen.
Well, that's it, isn't it? This is just a completely freakish era. Serena, Djokovic, Djokovic, but that doesn't happen to be who we're talking about at the moment. Serena, Nadal and Federer are the three, according to the stats, greatest tennis players of all time in their respective domains. Venus isn't far behind. history will remember them as such. It's not just that they happen to be these old blokes that are winning Grand Slam titles. We just happen to be in an era with some of, if not the greatest tennis players of all time, playing simultaneously, and we should just enjoy it for as long as we can. But I see the argument. I do see the argument.
I see it too. And on the subject of celebrating people while we can, bit of news just coming in, just as we upload this podcast for you all to listen to, is that Rafael Nadal is returning to the grass of Queens, the Aegon Championships in June, and Catherine and I will be there to see if Rafa can make another run at it. I mean, quite interesting that he missed last year, obviously, with the wrist problem. But in that period where he reached his Wimbledon finals, and what did he reach? Like 5 in 6 years? Because he reached the 06, 07, 08 finals, couldn't play 09, and then he played 10 and 11. So that's 5 in 6 years, and each one of those five, he got to the quarterfinals or better at Queens. That obviously works for him if he's fit. So anyway, great for us. We get to see him again.
If Wimbledon was held next week, who would be the favourite? I know that sounds awfully like a pole vault, which I don't.
Now we're having
it, isn't it? But who would be the favourite? Would Roger Federer be the favourite if Wimbledon were held next week?
That is an absolutely fantastic.
And would Rafael Nadal be the second favourite? I mean, I'm assuming Serena would be the favourite. That sort of goes without saying for me. But go on the spot.
Right, well, first of all, Tuesday morning is when I'm going to put out that pole vault, because that's brilliant, Catherine. I'm so pleased that you got into the spirit.
It's a question. It's not a pole vault.
It's definitely going to get pole vaulted. I would make Andy Murray the favourite for Wimbledon right now, still. Bear in mind that it's 4 months off.
He's also playing Queens.
Also playing Queens, lifetime commitment, so he'll be there for as long as he carries on playing the game.
He'll be 52, still playing.
No, that's just me. He'll be 52 and still there. The fact is, he's the reigning champion. Is Andy Murray? He's had one blip at the start of the year. Very sensibly, as it turns out, taking a break now and recharging his batteries. He's the favourite for me, as things stand for Wimbledon. Djokovic and Federer. I would put Federer marginally second favourite, I think, based on how many he's won and how good he looks right now. Long time to go, though.
No, no, it's tomorrow. It's next week. It's not long. No, I'm saying if Wimbledon were held tomorrow.
Oh.
Or next week. You've not just who's the favourite for Wimbledon.
Well,
any old person cannot. No, we can't have two pole vaults. We can barely have one pole vault. We can barely have one pole vault. Anyway.
Can I answer that one?
Yeah.
If it was held next week, yeah, I'd say Federer would be the favourite to win it if it's next week.
Nadal the second favourite?
No, not for me. I think Nadal, joint third stroke fourth favourite, yeah.
Serena the favourite in the women's?
Oh, unquestionably.
Where's Venus in the rankings?
Venus would be about three, I think, in the pecking order for Wimbledon if it's held next week. You know, she's probably a bit tired, so maybe I'd stick her further down. What do you think?
I think that it's a blooming good job that Wimbledon isn't next week, because it's about -3 degrees in London right now, so it would practically be sort of ice rink tennis. I think if it were held next week, Federer would be the favourite. If he's just won a Grand Slam on hard court, he'd be more likely to win one on grass. But
who's the favourite for it, the real Wimbledon then?
Now? Oh, that's impossible. That's impossible. Well, I'll go with Murray and or Djokovic. Because, I mean, with a completely hypothetical future prediction based on none of the facts you need at the time to make a prediction, you've got to just go with the rankings, haven't you? So Murray and or Djokovic and Serena and, I don't know about Angelique Kerber. I just don't know what's going to happen to Angelique Kerber this year. I hope she regroups, but yeah. David's saying Coco Vandeweghe. No, I mean, it's all getting too hypothetical, guys. It's all getting too hypothetical. But yes, luckily there is how many months before Wimbledon, before Queens? 5 months for the temperature, hopefully, to increase significantly. Because if not, I'm just going to go into hibernation, I think.
You already have.
I look like I already have. And on that note, I think it's time for me to have a nap, quite frankly. So thanks very much for listening to this cold tennis podcast back in the UK. We're brought to you in association with The Telegraph, as always, and we will speak to you soon.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires. Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.